Good day, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Henrik, and this is Red Ice Creations Radio, and we are coming to you from the west coast of Sweden. Good to have you along today. You can hear us on Thursdays and Sundays through our website, redicecreations.com, R-E-D-I-C-E, creations.com, where we also feature news, links, articles, and other resources from around the world and beyond. Also, don't forget that we have a growing member section loaded with material for you, our full radio archive, of course, with extended interviews with many of our guests, but also videos, short films, articles, and more. I want to say thank you for all the encouraging email and all the feedback we've been getting lately. I wanted to let you know that we read all our email, but due to time restraints, we cannot get back to everyone. But that doesn't mean that we don't appreciate your comments, article tips, links, and videos that you send us. Keep them coming. You guys and gals listening to this program are all aware eyes and ears out there that can help us to keep track on all the good and bad news and everything that falls in between that is considered to be worthy of more attention. Today we have an interesting program ahead of us. A few days ago when we did our program with Ian Crane, especially the second segment for our members, we talked about the Sion 2012 Olympics in London, and I consequently did a few more searches on the subject and came across this really interesting blog called The Cosmic Mind. There were three very interesting articles on this very same subject that went into these subjects a bit deeper as well. Posted a few of these stories up on Red Ice, and I decided to invite the author behind The Cosmic Mind to talk more with us about his blog, his findings, and much more. His name is Rick Clay, and you can find his blog at thecosmicmind.blogspot.com. That's thecosmicmind.blogspot.com. We're mainly going to focus on the 2012 Olympics in London today, but Rick has connected this with a lot of different subjects like numerology, the Mayan calendar, the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, and much more. So I suspect that we'll go into a lot different interesting areas here today. So with that, let's say a warm welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio, Rick, and thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Excellent. Nice to have you on the line. And, you know, you're a new voice, as it were, on this program, at least. And I'd love to hear a little bit about your background, if you will, Rick, from kind of what area you're coming from and how you started the blog and why and so forth.
Okay, well, I mean, what's recently happened to me is over the past 6 months, I've gone through some kind of awakening process where I've started seeing things for pretty much what they really are. I mean, it's been a few years in the making, if you know what I mean. But it seems like something's finally snapped, and I've finally got a realization over a lot of things that like kind of permeate our material world, if you like.
Right.
My history. I mean, I'm only 25. For about 5 years of my youth, I was touring with a band of mine called Fulk, and we released a couple of albums, toured the UK, toured Europe, made the odd music video. After a few years, that fell through. I went and carried on making my own music and got into graphic design, and I'm currently, like, when I'm not researching, I'm a manager of a design team at a new media company in Leeds, England. So I mean, to be honest, like, when I was about 12, 13, I had an interest in UFOs and everything that was alien. And, I mean, after about 3 or 4 years, I kind of grew out of that a bit and forgot about the whole alternate side to reality that obviously a lot of us are researching currently.
Yeah.
Everything started changing when 9/11 happened. And for a good few years, I was happy to go along with the official story, as pretty much a lot of people were.
Yeah.
Saw the film Loose Change. Loose Change gave me a completely new perspective on life. I mean, obviously, I've got my suspicions about the film now of where it actually came from out of such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Started researching politics, the New World Order. I found as I went into that line of research and just doing lots and lots of reading, I feel real bad negativity coming from everything that was, everything that I was reading. It felt really wrong. Hmm. It was, I just felt it was, the negativity of the whole subject involving politics and New World Order was, it was crippling. It was quite disgusting, really. So obviously, I moved on from that and started reading about the the 2012 main calendar stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the Zeitgeist was released. I mean, this is all part of the kind of awakening process. Goes when Zeitgeist was released, obviously introduced the idea of religious fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside the financial system and everything that goes with it. And, you know, if you've never thought about anything on this scale before, when you're watching those films for the first time, it is, it's pretty mind-blowing, isn't it, really? As a result, I ended up, wanting to get to these sites. You know, I travelled to Egypt, I travelled to Mexico, travelled to Malta, I went to see all the European megalithic sites and stuff. Basically really getting in, into the gritty of where, all these strange sites around the world, pretty much where it all stems from.
Yeah.
And taking my camera out with me, and eventually, I mean, when I was in Temple Luxor in Egypt, started getting some, significant pictures of orbs, if you've come across orbs before. The energetic light bulbs. I mean, some people claim that they're reflections of dust, but, when you're closely analysing them and you see the geometric patterns that are inside the... some of the lights that you get on your photographs, they're pretty insane, really.
Yeah.
And this obviously got me thinking on the level of the spirit, and I started realizing that, for all that, for the first 24 years of my life, all I'd been worried about was the world around me and pretty much, everything material.
Mm.
And did a bit of research and discovered Reiki. I found a lovely woman who essentially attuned me up to level 2 Reiki. And, I mean, since then I've... it's such a wondrous kind of energy to have to your life, like a, Reiki energy, and to be attuned to it is brilliant.
Mm.
Last year was the crucial pinnacle factor in, just completely snapping my old mindset. And I'd started paying an attention to crop circles in Wiltshire. I knew of crop circles, in previous years and stuff, but not really paid an interest to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'd made a decision with my friends to go down and look at the crop circles, and basically, on the day before we went down to view the crop circles, I'm based up in West Yorkshire in Leeds, I looked on Crop Circle Connector website just to, get a good feel for where the crop circles were so we could find them when we went down.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I noticed that there'd been a new crop circle found, and I was really baffled at this, because basically this new crop circle had appeared about 2 miles from my house.
Mm-hmm.
And this was pretty much one of the very first times that a crop circle had appeared in West Yorkshire, about 200 miles away from where crop circles normally appear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I rang up my friend who was coming down to Wiltshire with me, and we both drove out to this crop circle that had appeared near us, and, walk into this crop circle, and the energy in the crop circle was magnificent. There's clearly no one had been walking in this, and all I could put this down to when I was, stood in that crop circle was that, this crop circle had appeared the night before, telling me that I was doing the right thing by going to Wiltshire to look at the crop circles.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like a synchronistic kind of event in which there's a full manifestation of a crop circle in a field, right near me. And it had they'd never been in this area before.
Interesting.
It was pretty mind-blowing. So
yeah.
On the Saturday, we took the car out, drove down to Wiltshire to near Avebury, and obviously near Stonehenge and the likes. And... visited a few more crop circles, and on the night we attended a talk by Daniel Pinchbeck, who's mm-hmm. obviously done a lot of work in 2012 shamanic practices and consciousness and the likes.
Right.
At this lecture there was a crop circle researcher named Michael Glickman,
mm-hmm.
and having a good chat with him, and I asked him, I said, why would it be that, on the day before we come down to look at the crop circles in Wiltshire, one should appear right by us. What is that? And, I mean, this researcher himself had been researching for 20 years, said basically that, when you start showing a true interest in this kind of stuff, like a synchronicity when you call someone and, they pick up the phone having just thought of you, it's the same kind of principle. Like, if you show interest to these crop circles, then they'll start appearing near you.
Hmm.
And, for a researcher of 20 years to tell me that, I was quite stunned at essentially, what I was hearing and stuff.
Yeah.
And the day after, we moved on to Glastonbury. It was the 27th of July 2007, and it was the particular talk where David Shaler declared that he was the new Messiah.
Really?
Which, I mean, that sent ripples through me, because I'd never thought I'd ever, you know, attend a lecture in which you'd seen someone declare themselves as, like, the second coming of Christ, essentially.
Right.
It was pretty mind-blowing, and seeing 300 people in Glastonbury Town Hall completely outraged, emotional, crying, like, going totally insane. It was quite an event, really.
Yeah.
But at this same talk, Ian Crane gave a talk, who you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. and his talk centered around the prehistory of the history of an elite cabal that have obviously been working in effort to establish, you know, this thing called Zion at the 2012 Olympics.
Yeah.
And Ian had obviously correlated this to a staged alien invasion of sorts. And obviously, Wernher von Braun, on his deathbed, announced that, you know, the last disaster to hit the planet would be this, you know, this looming threat of an outside alien force.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I left this talk that we'd been to, and I was, you know, I'd got a shitload of things going around my mind, excuse my language. And
it's okay.
And then following that, I started getting these weird occurrences with the number 1111.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you do, you know, have you looked into much with the 1111 yourself? Do
oh,
you
yeah.
know about it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, to set the groundwork for where I'm coming from, obviously, I've got a few, like, facts here that I'd just like to, like, say, because obviously it's the basis for a lot of my work.
Yeah, sure.
And obviously, this number, this 11, this 1111, is, it seems to work itself into a lot of things. I mean, predominantly, the first thing is the universe itself, and obviously on the 11th of August 1999 at 11:11 a.m. there was a total solar eclipse that was observed through Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you move that further on the end date, December 21st 2012, the end date of the main calendar, the winter solstice, which is when the calendar ends, is at 11:11 a.m.
So I've heard.
So obviously,
yeah.
So we've got this effect where the universe is ringing these numbers at us, you know, in accordance to consciousness and stuff.
Yeah.
And when you look at it in an astrological sense, with the, you know, the precession of the equinoxes and the 26,000 year cycle of the Earth wobbling through the 12 signs of the zodiac, we're said to be moving into the new age of Aquarius.
Mm.
And Aquarius is the 11th astrological sign. And so, getting further into it, you look at the numbers of 2112, 2012, and you add all those numbers up, and you get an 11. And then you look into the sun, for instance, and the sunspot cycles are 11 years.
Mm.
And basically everything that you can just keep finding these 11s out of things. And you could argue that you're looking for them, but basically when it's that amount of things within the universe, it's not like I'm looking for them, because they are there.
Yeah.
You can't deny that. And so then you, like, start moving into the numerology of it. And for instance, if you get 1111 and you multiply it by 1111, you get the number 1234321, which is a pyramid. Okay, so you've got a pyramid numerology that you can get out of 1111.
Backtrack on that a little bit and take it a little bit slower for us again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you've got the time code 1111, and you multiply it by the same thing, so 1111 times 1111,
yeah,
you get the number 1234321.
Okay,
so
yeah.
If you imagine that as a visual, you've got a pyramid.
So yeah. One step up, that's number one. Then we have two, that's two steps up. Is that what you're going at here?
Yeah. So essentially, like, because you've got the 1234321, if you would plot that on a graph,
right,
on an X and Y, you'd have a pyramid.
Interesting.
So... And the same decreases, so if you've got 111, you times it by 111, you get 1, 2, 3, 2, 1. You get a pyramid, whichever way you look at it, anything with a base of 1.
Interesting.
And so then, if you look at the 11 itself, and in binary, an 11 stands for a 3. So obviously you've got a trinity out of it.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So if you were to convert to binary, it would mean it'd be 3. So essentially, then if you look at this idea of the trinity with it, you know, 33rd degree Masons, the number 33 that goes around. Obviously, if you turn that into the Trinity and you divide 33 by 3, you get 11.
That's interesting.
So you start, like, seeing these 11s, as I'm saying. So then you move on to recent events and you get to September the 11th, 2001, right? And you realize that the building was stood like an 11. The two towers stood like an 11.
Indeed.
And then you've got 9, 9, 11, which is 9 plus 1 plus 1, which is 11. And then you realize that September the 11th was 111 days until the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start thinking about the first plane that hit the World Trade Center, and it was Flight 11.
There you go, yeah.
Right, and the total number of crew on Flight 11 was 11. And then you look into it further, and the New York State was the 11th state of the US Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so then you start thinking about where September the 11th stands in year, as far as years are concerned. And September the 11th, 2001, stands 11 years from 2012.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And there's an author called Jose Argueles. He wrote that from 1992 to 2012 would be in a period of May of No Time, the time of no time,
yeah.
Which was a transition of the ages kind of period in which, you know, basically world disasters and tension would be on the up and rise constantly. And this period of no time was 1992 to 2012. And so 9/11 in September the 11th, 2001, was 9 years from the start of No Time, 11 years till the end of No Time.
Mm-hmm.
So, synchronistically, it was placed bang on where, you know, it should have been. And so then you start thinking about, was 9/11 an event that was either, you know, was it, as Jose Argueles would put it, was it an inevitable event? You know, was it designed by the universe for it to happen as it did?
Yeah.
You look into it further, and World Trade Center commenced building in 1966 and finished building it in 1977. So it took 11 years to create as well.
Yeah.
So you can move on from that, forget all that for the time being, and then you can get to September the 11th in history. And on September the 11th, 1990, at 9:09 p.m., that's 11 years prior to 9/11, George Bush Sr. made his very first speech entitled Towards a New World Order in the UN, you know, at the UN.
Hmm.
So this was 11 years prior. And then if you take that back 60 years, so you go back to September the 11th, 1941, you'll realise that 60 years to 9/11, that was when the soil was broken for the Pentagon.
Pentagon, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so you've got this date, September the 11th, again running through this kind of, you know, the nasty war machine of America, if you want to call it that.
Exactly.
And so then you... Basically, there's something that happened much further back in time than that, and there's a book written in 1981, and it was called The Birth of Christ Recalculated, and it was written by a guy called Ernest L. Martin, and he claims to have calculated the exact date of Jesus Christ's birthday based on celestial charts for that era.
Yeah.
Basically, he'd worked out with the famous Star of Bethlehem, which was, you know, he worked out that essentially Jesus Christ was born on September the 11th, 3 BC. This book was released in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've got another date there.
I think that's actually a key area to why we potentially are seeing so many things oriented around the 9 and the 11 September.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, when it comes into other significant events, for instance, when you... You know, think about America and NASA and stuff. The very first, like, shuttle that got to the moon was Apollo 11.
Yeah, there you go.
And then, for instance, in Great Britain, I think it's celebrated around the world, actually, but on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, we celebrate Remembrance Day, in which, you know, we honour our war dead, but it's on an 11-11, and it's basically, you know, the Queen and a load of other people taking poppies to a cenotaph, which is an obelisk, essentially.
Yeah.
So, you know, little strange events going on all over the place.
Indeed.
I mean, talking about the Queen, moving into royalty, and this is where, I mean, I'll lead much deeper into royalty later on, but basically, if you look into the history of the word crown and the royal crown, the word crown was derived from Anglo-French word called caroon, which is derived from Latin for corona. But the year that the word crown, you know, was first established was in the year 1111.
Huh, really? That's interesting.
Right.
Huh,
so,
wow.
You know, I mean, you can't just say that these are coincidences, all of these things that are kind of like connected up. And I get to a point where, you know, at first I thought they were coincidences, but then you think, you know,
yeah.
What is this thing called chance?
Yeah.
You know, what is it?
Indeed.
So anyhow, that's the groundwork for 11. And then this is where I'd started seeing this time code 1111 on clocks and stuff. And this is when I started getting this flood of information. I don't know where I've been receiving it from, but I've been receiving it from somewhere recently. I don't know what it's all about, to be honest. But basically, sorry.
No, I just wanted to say it's interesting, and to some extent, I think that this is information that wants to get out. I think it's kind of a self-containing awareness within itself, meaning that it is trying to reach out and teach us how things are interconnected. And I think that numerology and so-called coincidence or meaningful coincidence, synchronicity, is a perfect way to demonstrate to us that everything is interconnected. And I think that there are so many levels to all of this. So what we're beginning to discover are some of the most, in a way, actually obvious and very clear signs of this. But I would imagine that this is something that actually runs throughout exactly everything, if you have, basically the amount of time to study something or look at it in close enough detail.
I mean, the thing with all the 11s for me is essentially, I come from the viewpoint, I believe in a mind before matter universe.
Yeah.
Everything stems from consciousness. Consciousness precipitates matter, not the other way around, as scientists would have you believe it.
Yeah.
And I mean, the way that I can, kind of prove that to myself and hopefully to others is that, I mean, I don't mean to be crude about this, but when, for instance, a man is sleeping and he has an orgasm in the middle of the night, right, the process that's created that is not any physical action. It's all stemmed from thought.
Yeah.
And so if you think about that, then obviously that thought has then created the ability to create life.
That's
if
right.
If you understand where I'm coming from.
Oh, and yeah, so, definitely. Exactly. It's so, a very good point.
That for me is the proof that everything is a mind before matter universe. You know, you can create life with thought.
Yeah.
You know, so that means that everything that you're looking at essentially is consciousness.
Hmm.
And that's my way of like kind of, that's where I come from with a lot of this. And given the 11s, you know, connected with the Pentagon and connected with the 9/11, like World Trade Center disaster and everything, that to me is indicative of someone else trying to hijack consciousness. I don't know what it is, but for me, there seems to be some kind of other side of things that are hijacking this number for themselves. Mm. And I'll obviously lead into that in a bit.
Yeah.
But basically, moving into the Olympics work, obviously, I mean, it's been bandied around the internet quite a bit, but if you shuffle the Olympics 2012 logo around, you can spell the word Zion.
Indeed.
And, you know, there's a lot of stigma against the word, and, you know, for no reason whatsoever. But obviously Zion stands for the term New Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And this got me, having seen the Ian Crane speech and everything, this got me doing my, essentially, I had an urge to start my own research into this. I wanted to find out if what was saying could be proven kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, first thing that brought to my mind was the poem by William Blake. And William Blake wrote a poem in the 18th century called Jerusalem. And there's a paragraph, the final like few words in that poem says, "I will not cease from mental flight, nor shall my sword sleep in my hand, till we have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land." So basically, William Blake was a known 18th century esotericist with connections to the Freemasons. And, he was famous for such pieces of artwork as Urias and the Creator, which is a big picture of like kind of, you know, the Creator with a compass opened up like a pyramid. Just like, you know, Freemasonic symbology and stuff.
Didn't he reference the Newton in regards to that painting? Have you heard about that?
There is the Newton painting as well, and Newton is kind of on the, like, lurched over on the floor with his compass. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
That's a different painting of William Blake.
It is, okay.
But essentially in that poem, we'd got an acknowledgement from a guy connected with esoteric research that they were intent on building Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land.
Mm.
So, you know, we're thinking, like, when we talk about the Olympics 2012, we're talking about something that's been planned for hundreds of years, and there's a lot of proof that I've dug up that can show that.
Mm.
But basically, moving into the Olympics even further, after this talk, and when I got back from this talk in July last year, the first thing that happened was there was a video released by the Olympic Committee, and this was a stadium design video, and it was this crazy CGI, I don't know what you want to call it, action film on how they're going to build the Olympic 2012 stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And given what Ian had spoke about with aliens and Independence Day style spaceships and stuff, this has got it all in it. Basically, within 40 seconds of this video, there's four chimneys that stand like an 11-11, but then it moves into the most significant symbology you could ever see with like you know, an Independence Day style mothership for a roof, little UFOs flying all around the London Eye, and then it ends up robotic streetwalkers in the middle of London stomping around the place, all like towards the Olympic Stadium. I mean, it's pretty weird to watch it, and it's on my blog and it's on YouTube as well. If you just do a search for the stadium design video, you can see for yourself that there's definitely symbology in there, like, you know, whether you like it or not. this got me thinking. I was like, where does this go? Does this mean that there is a significant event looming for the Olympics? And I started thinking to myself, well, you know, if they're about to do this now, they've done this before. You know, they've used the Olympics for such events before.
Yeah.
Which led me into looking into 1972 Olympics in Munich. Mm. Now, funnily enough, these were the world's first stage for global terrorism. You know, the very first global, like, you know, declared as global terrorism, the first act was in the 1972 Munich Olympics.
Indeed, yeah.
And on these Olympics, there were 11 Israelis killed. So we've got the number 11 there. Mm. And they were killed by a group called Black September, which is obviously the ninth month. So it's obviously a 9/11 you've got there.
Yeah.
And that particular Olympics were host to 121 countries, which is 11 times 11. Mm. So you've got a significant event there with first, like, global stage for terrorism, as it is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, moving on, I started thinking, well, you know, the year 1984, there's obviously Olympics in that year.
Mm.
And it's synonymous with the George Orwell book of Big Brother and, you know, a completely, you know, oppressive state, if you like, a new world order kind of background.
Yeah.
And I'd briefly remembered hearing things about a closing ceremony in the 1984 Olympics, and did some rooting around on the internet, and obviously came across a video. In the 1984 Olympics, which were held in Los Angeles, they closed the ceremony, and the audience didn't even expect this, because most of the audience thought it was real at the time. It closed with a UFO flying over the Olympic Stadium, kind of communicating with the audience in a Close Encounters of the, you know, the Third Kind style.
Right, right.
And the UFO eventually, like, closes down and lands in the centre of the stadium, at which point there's a load of smoke, and then this alien gets out and tells the audience that he likes what he sees there. So you've got this really strange thing out of the middle of nowhere. No one was expecting it, and I don't know how you'd ever connect Olympics with this UFO event in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, obviously, 1984, symbolic year, UFO landed.
Hmm.
So you start thinking, stuff going on, not sure what, I can't really put my finger on things. And at this point, I'd decided to move away from the Olympics for a bit, because I felt that, you know, I wasn't going to find much more for the time being. And it got me involved in looking at symbols of sorts, and general symbolism and corporate logos. And I started off with, obviously, the all-seeing eye on the dollar bill.
Yeah.
And if you notice with the all-seeing eye on the dollar bill, on the particular side that it's on, it's the only note that it appears on in America.
Mm.
And there's four ones on it, and they ring out 11-11, either side of the dollar bill.
Indeed, yeah.
You've got the same thing again. And I was looking at that, and basically started comparing it to other, you know, American institutions, looking it through, you know, the FBI logo, the CIA logo, every single one of them, you can essentially kind of draw out the pyramid without the capstone and have an eye in the centre. You know, the same geometrics work in a lot of the, you know, the official, like, institutions of America.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get to the source of where this was. And everyone, like, you know, generally a misinterpretation is that America was the foundation of all of this, you know, in 1776. And, you know, I mean, for a while I thought America was the start of all of this New World Order stuff. I didn't think any further than that. My consciousness wouldn't allow it.
Yeah.
But eventually came to me, you know, Britain, obviously, the British founded America.
Yeah.
In a Western kind of empire, like, sense. But looked at the British coat of arms, and if you pick up the British coat of arms, again, you'll notice that you've got a pyramid, and where the all-seeing eye is, you've got a crown.
Hmm.
You know, it's the same thing. You can draw the same geometrics over it, and you've got smack bang the same symbols coming at you.
Hmm.
So I was like, right, well, what's going on here then? This is obviously a lot more you know, ingrained in the human civilization, like, more than thought, anyhow.
Indeed.
At which point, which point you then start moving to the famous corporate symbols of McDonald's and Schweppes and Starbucks, these amazing like corporations that are, you'll find them in all the symbolic places of the world. Like when I've been to Rome, you've got a McDonald's opposite the Pantheon and the Egyptian obelisk. And then if you go to the Sphinx in Cairo, and you've got a KFC and you've got a McDonald's right outside the entranceway. And, you know, literally everywhere you go, you can no doubt find one of these kind of food venues or whatever.
The pest.
You know, right next to some of these symbolic structures.
Yeah.
And so, with, for instance, explain the McDonald's logo. You got 9 letters in the word McDonald's, and I decided to split that up into pyramid numerology. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 2, 1. Split the word up, do you know what I mean? Into a step kind of structure.
And I think you have this on your blog, isn't that right? So people that are tuning in can take a look at that.
You can take a look at it on my blog, but basically, to spell it out, basically the two, you can form a pyramid-like word out of it in which... the cornerstones and the top part of the pyramid minus the capstone spell the word Mason. And essentially what the pyramid is showing is that the two arches of Freemasonry, or the golden arches, or whatever you want to call them, emanate from the centre of the pyramid and preside all the way onto the outside of the pyramid. So essentially you've got this event that seems to preside over the pyramid. And then same thing goes with the Schweppes logo. I mean, this, I had a real good 11-11 moment with this, because it happened in a glass of Schweppes tonic water when the ice cubes started ringing at me.
Right.
And I thought that was, it was pretty mental, but it was insinuating something was happening.
Nice.
And
nice.
I looked on the bottle, and the year 1783, on, obviously on the all-seeing eye, the date 1776.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, we're a bit close, we're a bit too close for comfort here, we're in the period of the Enlightenment, is what they call it.
Yeah.
And look at their logo, and it doesn't even take any deciphering, this one. There's a pyramid with an angel on top, with a McDonald's-style M presiding over the pyramid. Mm. So essentially you've got more messianic imagery in the logo of a corporate symbol. you know, and all I can think is this company, Schweppes, they teamed up with Cadbury's. They're instrumental in destroying the health of the world, because they create sugary drinks and, you know, aspartame-ridden drinks and everything that goes with it. And they're using this symbology. So you can look at that on my blog yet again, because it's all on there.
Very interesting.
Get to Starbucks. And Starbucks, if you look at, when you're walking past any old Starbucks, you'll notice that the logo is three stars that make a pyramid. And the very top star is seated on top of a crown, which is essentially, you know, symbolic of the all-seeing eye. But underneath the crown is a woman. And that woman is Isis. Mm-hmm. So the Egyptian deity Isis.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what I've realized over the past few days is that what these logos are depicting is some form of messianic event.
Yeah.
And when you look into a book, there's a book called The Secret Teachers of All Ages from 1928. By Manly P. Hall.
Indeed.
And states, Isis is sometimes shown standing between two great pillars of Freemasonry.
Yeah.
So deity Isis stands between these pillars. So on the McDonald's logo, where you've got the M, and you've got the M coinciding on the top of the pyramid, and the same on the Schweppes logo, where you've got the angel stood on top of the pyramid, they're representing Isis. That's, there's no other way of looking at it, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, Isis is symbolic of the all-seeing eye. It's the same thing. Same as when you look in, for instance, into the Holy Trinity and stuff, and you've got the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
There's the evidence of the kind of, you know, the ever-looming one who sees everything but isn't quite there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyhow, this stuff, this occult symbolism, it works on a dual level, you know, like optical illusions. For instance, you can now look at a picture and do you see the old woman or do you see the young woman?
Yeah.
It's got the duality, same as everything else when it comes down to religion.
Yeah.
Most people are tuned to see one thing, but it actually means another thing as well. But it depends which version you want to go with. There's two ways to look at it.
Mm.
My opinion on everything with the occult is that it's working on a different plane outside of the five sense human reality. It's, you know, it's something that's working in the subconscious.
Yeah.
And going on that principle of mind before matter universe, when you're looking at this occult symbolism, and if one person is, say, looking at the Schweppes logo, and they're drinking Schweppes, and they're buying into this logo, they're buying into the brand, they're buying into all of it. I think they're just buying into a great drink, but they're also buying into this other thing. They're buying into this messianic event. And essentially, if you think about this mind before matter universe, if this stuff, this occult symbology is working on the subconscious, and it's working on the subconscious of a global population, then it's got the ability to still bring itself forward into matter. Do you know what I mean?
So it's what you're saying is that with the help of all these knowing people, so to speak, this is propelled forward. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, for instance, like when someone goes to a McDonald's and they're buying into the McDonald's, you know, how clever they got that anyhow.
Right.
But when they're going in and they're buying those McDonald's, they're also, you know, they're buying into the alternate, like the alternate thing, which is the symbol of, you know, this messianic event on the top of a pyramid. You know, it's empowering it. It's building it into the subconscious, and that subconscious can precipitate into matter at the right time.
And that's interesting, considering that many of these companies are so, I mean, they're global players. I mean, some of these companies have bigger, you know, a bigger economy and gain more money than certain countries do.
We've got no idea how they got so successful. I mean, you know, there's no reason for it, to be honest, apart from that there's something else there working with them.
Do you also think that, potentially this could work the other way around, meaning that human beings, since we've been subjected to, at least in the Western world, you know, almost 1700 years of Christianity and so forth, that this, the reason also why they might want to pick a logo like this or you know, have this message in the logo is that on some level this speaks to our unconscious. So people who are inclined to, lean towards the Christian faith, for instance, are actually in some way kind of lured in by these kinds of symbols and consequently they...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing that I'll draw upon later is that how this, like, this works with more than just Christianity. Because if Isis has many identifications, and she's got an identification as the angel Gabriel and the All-Seeing-Eye and stuff.
Yeah.
But when we talk about this New World Order and the One World Religion and the One World Government, the angel Gabriel is the one figure that can unite Islam and Christianity, because both of them are dear to her as God's messenger. So when you're looking at implementing this New World Order, it's got to be something that combines these two religions. And that particular figure is that thing that can combine those religions. I'll touch on that in a bit anyhow. It gets deeper. I'll be telling you all it is in a minute.
sure, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'll give it a bit of time. I'll give you another 10 minutes.
Sounds
and I'll
good.
Let you know it is. But anyhow, moving back to the Olympics logo and the Zion logo and the 2012 and stuff. Basically, there's a little bit of research, there's stuff on the net about this as well. The company who created that logo is a company called Wally Owens and Wolf Owens is a brand agency. And this brand agency was set up by a chap called Wally Owens, and this man was responsible for branding corporate Europe. So basically, you know, GE Capital, all these logos that have kind of, you know, sunk into the subconscious of sorts, these are all like created by this man called Wally Owens, who created the 2012 logo as well. And it turns out his dad was a Freemason.
Nice.
So the chances are that, you know, there's an interview online where he references his dad trying to get him to be a Freemason. He never actually says whether he is or not, but the chances are it's in the family. And, you know, there's these messages in the logos that this man's produced. It's a Freemasonic branding, you know, company for corporate Europe.
Yeah, wow.
Essentially.
Really interesting. I wanted to the name there, Gail. Wally Owens, is that right?
Wally Owens.
Right, thank you. Okay.
WALLYOLINS.
Perfect, thank you.
Right, and so... At this point, you know, you've got this connection to Freemasonry with the logo and stuff, and it moves much higher than Freemasonry. That's just like the outside protection for this stuff. I basically loaded up, Google Earth, wanted to have a look at the London site from the air. I wanted to see, you know, what it is that's so special about this place. And, it just so happened that the particular site in Stratford was the only last bit of wasteland that was... that was left vacant in London. It was the one last place that they could do things for something like the Olympics. So, you know, it's quite lucky that they had it in the first place. And what I noticed was I started looking at the actual street plan of this place. And to go through it, you've got a number of roads that circle the site, and the first road is a road called the Eastern Cross Route. The East Cross Route, which is a reference to the Eastern Cross.
Hmm.
The Eastern Cross is an Orthodox cross, and it's a modified version of the Patriarchal Cross. It's got two smaller cross beams across the side. Next road down, you've got Carpenter's Road, which encircles the site. Carpenter, who was a carpenter? Oh, good old Joseph.
Yeah,
he was
of course.
A carpenter, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Next road down, you've got a road called the Great Eastern Road.
Mm.
And obviously when you refer to something as the Great Eastern, it's obviously like the Great Eastern Star. So you look into the Great Eastern Star, it turns out that the Order of the Eastern Star is the largest fraternal organisation in the world that both men and women can join,
yeah.
And it was founded by someone highly connected with the Freemasons, and their symbol is the pentagram.
Hmm.
So this is the next road down.
Yeah.
Moving on around the Olympic site, if you envisage we're encapsulating the whole Olympic site here, the next road along is Angel Lane,
mm.
And obviously the famous angel is the angel Gabriel.
Hmm.
So we've got Angel Lane here. Next road along, we've got Temple Mills Lane. Temple Mills, where the water mills belong to the Knights Templar.
Yeah.
So another connection there. The Knights Templar were the poor fellow soldiers of Christ in the Temple of Solomon.
Hmm.
And then encapsulating all of this is Church Road. It's obviously another biblical road name.
Yeah.
So all the way around the Olympics 2012 site, which you could call Zion if you go with the logo, mm. is biblical road names surrounding the whole site. There's not one road name that's not biblical. So you start looking at that and you think, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
This site was supposedly a fluke that they found this, and you know what we're looking at is something that is clearly quite well planned. So if you move into, like, for instance, there's one road here that's called the East Cross Route. It's called the A12.
Mm.
It's another road name for it. And if I move into, say, for instance, hieroglyphics for a start, hieroglyphics back in the days of ancient Egypt, they were seen as talismans in that a particular hieroglyphic didn't mean like one letter, like a H. It meant a multitude of emotions. It meant a multitude of meanings. And it basically, you know, it drew in the powers of the stars. That's what a hieroglyph was. It was a talisman.
Yeah.
It wasn't a direct translation. So, like, for instance, when they do a direct translation of the Rosetta Stone, you can't translate hieroglyphics into H, A's and Z's and stuff like that. Do you
sure.
know what I mean?
Sure.
So basically, if you think of this idea of hieroglyphics as talismans, power of the stars embedded in this symbol, if you want to call it that.
Mm.
And then everyone assumes that the English language moved on from that, and that our letters just meant letters, just to spell words out, and that the word symbols at all. But the fact is that if you look into the idea that the power control in Egypt never died out, and they've been endemic to the power structure from the very start,
mm.
the letters on the English alphabet are just as much hieroglyphs as the hieroglyphics were, the talismans.
I agree,
so
yeah. Yeah.
If you look at the letter A, for instance, you've got a pyramid with a capstone, a capital mm. letter A.
Yeah.
And then if you look at an S, you've got a snake. And then if you've got like a dollar sign, you've got a snake rising up what could be a kundalini or, you know, a DNA coil, whatever yeah. you want to call it.
Yeah.
Basically, these letters have got meanings behind them. And so this main road that cuts through the Olympics 2012 site, which is called the East Cross Road, is also known as the A12 Road.
Mm.
Now, there's hundreds of A roads in Britain. And so what are the chances that of all the roads that cross through it were an A12 road,
hmm.
a Pyramid 12 road? Do you see where I'm coming from with
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Very interesting.
It's pretty strange that one road, you know, this is what I'm saying, coincidence is this load of rubbish that this is coincidence. It's not
yeah.
coincidence whatsoever.
No.
And then you look into the situation of where it's situated in London and Eastern London, and you'll find that it's in two areas. It's separated between Leighton and Leightonstone.
Mm.
And I don't know if you're aware of what a ley line is, but basically...
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, if you look into this, the Olympic site is bang on where two ley lines cross over.
Hmm.
So we're on about something that's connected to the energy grid of, you know, the world, like
yeah.
the lifeblood of the Earth, if you want to call it that.
Nice.
Interestingly enough, before when commenced work on the Olympics 2012 site as well, I mean, I got this information off a chap on a message board, but he basically said that they'd organised a massive rave on the Olympic 2012 site,
uh-huh.
in which no doubt there's a lot of government-sponsored drugs out there. and a lot of energy being given off.
Oh,
and if you think about these energy lines, and they're inviting people to have raves on these sites, alongside holding some of the biggest like competitions in the world ever, think about what's happening with all that energy.
Oh,
where
is
that going? It's probably being fed into the system somewhere. And I think that's I mean, there's a lot of, you know, for instance, as far as UFOs are concerned and stuff like that, if you look into UFO sightings and stuff, a lot of them can be attributed to being near ley lines and stuff. Because obviously a UFO isn't necessarily something that's definitely fixed in our particular 3D world. Something that can be obviously of another dimension of sorts. But basically, like, you've got this Zion street map that's fully biblical in every way. And you then decide, well, I decided to pick up the Bible. I don't normally pick up the Bible, I'm not that type of person. But basically picked up and went to the book of Mark. And I decided to go to the chapter 11, verse 11. You know, the old 11:11.
Yeah.
We got this passage here. Then Jesus went into Jerusalem and into the temple and looked around at everything. Since it was already late, he went out with his 12 disciples to Bethany. So we've got a mention of Jesus entering Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Which is obviously Zion's the New Jerusalem.
Mm.
And he says that since it was already late, he went out with his 12 disciples to Bethany. Right next to the Olympics 2012 site, down at a Roman road, is a place called Bethnal Green. Bethnal Green, Bethany, sounds the same. Pretty close, you know, not too far off.
Yeah.
Bethnal Green is 3.3 miles, 33rd degree, Masons and everything, 3.3 miles from Charing Cross, the centre of London.
Yeah.
Symbolic and numerology and everything that goes with it.
Of course, I don't know if you've heard, but if we look at the research of Ralph Ellis, he talks that Mary Magdalene might have been Mary of Bethany. You know, there's a whole connection between Bethany and the you know, the family of Jesus, if you will, or you know.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, with the whole idea of the Dan Brown bloodline and the Priory of Sion and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's I mean, I'll get onto that shortly, but that's all part of the plan. That's all part of what's intended here. They wanted to incite the public with the idea that there's a lost bloodline of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, you know, pretty scary. Stop it off. But on a funny note, have you heard of EastEnders before?
Say it again.
EastEnders, the English soap opera.
No, I have not. No.
No, right. It's a popular thing that most of, I'd say 90% of the population probably watch it, unfortunately.
Really?
It's those typical soap operas. And if you watch the intro sequence to that, basically, behind the EastEnders logo, where, you know, on this intro sequence, is the Olympics 2012 site. So basically, this thing that's making everyone forget about what's going on around them, that's distracting them, providing them with rubbish stories and terrible plot lines and everything,
yeah,
you know, stopping people from thinking, is symbolically showing this area on the TV screen every night of the week.
Interesting.
Quite
very
weird.
Interesting, yeah.
So, I mean, now I can get on to, I think I've set a good standing for this whole idea of Zion and this biblical event of sorts.
You know what I think we should do, like this, Rick, I think that we should take a break right here, actually, because this has been basically an hour-long preface here, and, you know, obviously I've got tons of questions and comments, but I definitely want to just let you kind of lay out what you, you know, what you have here, so to speak, and we can analyze that later on. But I think that we should take a little break and then continue in our members section and talk more about this, because I know that there's tons more to talk about regarding this. What do you think? Yeah. So what do you think, Rick? Is that a good idea?
That's fine. That's brilliant.
Let's do it like this before here, though, that, you know, as we mentioned, we've kind of set the preface here, and we're going to really get into the juicy stuff here more in the member section. But I want to finish off with you telling us a little bit more about your blog, and also let me know if you have any ideas so far to put this into another form, a DVD, a book, because obviously there's, you know, a lot of material there. Any ideas about that?
Well, I was only thinking about this the other day, because obviously a blog is a limited way to get the information out. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, my full kind of ideology is that everything that I'm doing is going to be free. I don't believe in charging for anything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this capitalist system that's falling down around our necks, you know, I haven't got any explanation as to what can replace that, but I'm certainly not, you know, intent on, you know, distributing my work in any other way apart from freely. It'd be lovely to, I mean, I was talking about this earlier with a friend of mine, it'd be a it'd be a good thing for a film of sorts. I think I've got enough stuff here for a film, and I'd like to try and do that.
Yeah, of course.
Because that obviously something like that is much more manageable for the masses.
Of course.
And it's about reaching the masses with this information.
And I mean also, of course, if you come from a perspective where you can, finance a film like that, that is great. But also, you know, consider the fact that if you charge a small amount, that might also get you pursuit on the next or the following productions, which mean that you can heighten your production quality and you can reach more people. So I mean, I definitely understand where you're coming from, but it's also a good idea to keep the other side of that issue at hand, so to speak, as an alternative.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You need to eat too, mate. So.
I need to think a lot about this stuff, really. I do too much thinking as it is, to be honest. But I'm sick of thinking.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you really kind of also tapped into the intuition, and then the thinking part of all of this is, of course, to analyze it within the conscious mind and to try to see how all these pieces fit together. But I mean, what you've laid out so far here is a brilliant picture, and it's going to be really interesting to hear more about this also, of course, in our member section. But mention for us, before we go there, mention your your blog address for us, so we know how to find more of your material.
Yeah, I've got a shortened address. You can get to it from http://www.thecosmicmind.co.uk.
Very good. Again, thecosmicmind.blogspot.com. Do check it out. It's tons of material on there, and Rick is really in tune with the muse, as it were. So I expect a lot of interesting stuff has already, of course, passed through his way and through his blog. But I suspect more interesting stuff is gonna keep on evolving here as well. So, but we'll do like this then. We'll take a short break here. We'll return in our member section, and so stay with us, Rick, and we'll talk more soon.
Okay, brilliant.
Before we continue with Rick Clay, I want to mention that our new forum is up and running, rediceforum.com. We'll get you there. It's one open forum and one members forum. So if you want to connect with other listeners or other Red Ice members, talk some about the recent radio programs, recent headlines, discuss solutions or what have you, click on forum on our front page, and from there you can register. Don't miss our continuation of our program with Rick Clay. We have a lot more information and interesting points to cover as we tie things together in the thesis that Rick is presenting to us. This is not to be missed, so head on over to redicecreations.com, redicecreations.com, and click on subscribe to get all the information on how you can sign up and get instant access to the member section. For everyone who want to go deeper into these subjects, this is highly recommended. We have a lot of material waiting there for you, with new content added on a regular basis, so do check it out. We're going to end this segment with a really nice instrumental piece that is called Adrift, that is by Rick, that he sent me. As he mentioned in the interview, he's a musician and writes his own music. You can find his solo project via myspace.com/somewherenothere, all one word. So it's myspace.com/somewherenothere. That's good stuff. So thank you for tuning in, and thanks to Fredrik behind the controls. We'll catch you after this break.